Up the road from Fallujah and still west of Baghdad, the city of Ramadi has also been traded back and forth between the opposition and government forces in Iraq. Retired Colonel Tony Dean, a 28-year veteran of the Army, was on the ground during the 2006 Battle of Ramadi. His new book is called Ramadi Declassified, A Roadmap to Peace in the Most Dangerous City in Iraq. He talks about how he and his men were able to work with the local population to take back the city from Al-Qaeda and how that could help win the war against ISIS today.
Anytime that you're taking land back from a terrorist group like ISIS, it's a good thing. And the Sunni people have been the biggest victims of the terrorists, be it Al-Qaeda in Iraq or their current incarnation of ISIS. That said, are they taking back Fallujah because they want to get rid of the terrorists, or is this some more Shia-Sunni violence play into an internal audience and they're really just, you know, launching off on the Shia one more time? And so it's really hard to see inside of Iraqi politics. And there's a lot of turmoil going on over there with Muqtada al-Sadr and the rest of the Sadrists raising up. So, you know, I wonder if this is really the next strategic move, or was this to placate the Shias?
Which leads to a much bigger question, and that is, what was the opportunity in Iraq? President George W. Bush had this idea that there was some weapons of mass destruction issue. We go into Iraq. Chaos erupts by the time you get there in 2006. There were some significant victories, but yet, even though, you know, we don't speak of exit strategies, Barack Obama says we're out of Iraq, there is this sense of a mission having utterly lost its way in Iraq. If you were a, five-star or four-star commanding CENTCOM, what would you prescribe for Iraq and the Middle East generally right now?
I think one of the biggest issues that we have is there is if you look at what's the alternative. So if you're a Sunni, if you're a Sunni man, what are your options? I can throw in with the terrorist, or I can throw in with the government in Baghdad that has proven it's out to get me. So until there's some sort of political accommodation in Iraq that has some power sharing government, we'll just keep doing what we're doing. And if you think about it, people talk about an open-ended commitment. We've been bombing Iraq my entire adult life. I have been in Iraq since I've been a kid, you know, since I first came in the Army. And so for 25 years, we've been going at it, trying to do it on the cheap. And I'd say, you know, it's going to take a long-term commitment. And if how we get, you know, ISIS will fall. Sooner or later, they'll fall. But another group will come in their place if we don't have the institutions in place to help the Iraqis and help the people across the Middle East, you know, take care of their own problems.
And so your models are Germany at the end of World War II, Japan at the end of World War II, the long-term commitment in Korea, not Desert Storm.
No, I mean, I was a veteran in Desert Storm, and that's good. Those things are needed, but
you described Desert Storm as a huge unlucky break for the United States when you really think of what it meant.
I think it gave people a big false expectation of what the military can and cannot do.
And that's hard to say because that's your big victory. That's your first,
yeah,
as a kid, big victory.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
wish we'd lost.
Well,
I know you don't say that. I know you're not saying that.
But I think that we really tempered. I think people said, oh, the military can do anything in 100 hours. And it really is long-term commitment. And the other thing, if you look at long-term commitment, if you look at Italy, post-war Italy had, what, 43,
right,
45 governments?
Exactly.
And it took the American presence, not a large one, but there was an American presence there that was kind of that steady hand that got them through those years. And, you know, to think, you know, there were a tremendous amount of missteps. And you can debate going into the war. There was a lot of reasons why, and there wasn't on both sides. But the debathification policies, you know,
it was disaster.
Disaster. Yeah. Disbanding the army, disaster.
Disaster.
Throwing in with these external people, like Shalabi, disaster. But by 2006, things had gotten pretty good. Well, by 2006, the tide had turned. General Petraeus came in with the surge, 7 and 8. Things got pretty good. And really, towards the end there, things were running pretty well. And actually, Maliki went after the Shia death squads down in Basra at the end of 10. And so things looked like they were going the right way. But when we left, we were the honest broker. When we, you know, by 2010, the Americans were seen as the honest broker. And when we left, Maliki arrested the vice president, Tashimi. He had to leave the country, and he purged the army of capable Sunnis, and he sent the army into Anbar.
Do you think the American people are prepared to make a decision one way or another to go either towards the patient approach that you're talking about or just throwing up their hands?
I don't think throwing up their hands are an option. I mean, it is if you want to have attacks on American soil. I mean, rather fight them there than fight them here, okay? We've really politicized, especially Iraq, and to a lesser extent Afghanistan. If you think back after September 11th, the unity that was in this country, you flash forward 4 years later and the country's ready to come apart at the seams. And so all politicians need to say, hey, I can't solve this problem in my term, be it a representative or a president or my two terms or whatever. This is going to take some thought and some long term because we've been trying to do it on the cheap for the past 25 years.
Colonel Tony Dean, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Retired Colonel Tony Dean is a 28-year veteran of the Army and was on the ground during the 2006 Battle of Ramadi. His new book is called Ramadi Declassified, A Roadmap to Peace in the Most Dangerous City in Iraq.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.